When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
When it comes to hiring, don't search for a great talent. Match with them. Thanks to Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find qualified candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility. Go to Indeed.com/listen and tell them you heard about them from this podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
So do you look at those four younger guys, Drew, Davis, Sean, Jonathan Cannon, as the rotation nucleus right now?
Yeah, we've got Jairo Iriarte that came up in the bullpen as well. So, you know, he'll get a long look in spring training. You know, we'll look to make some additions as well this offseason. We've got some other arms in Mason Adams that will be in Major League camp. In a guy, so we think that we still have the depth in starter innings. With that being said, we're gonna see if we can bring in some guys that can stabilize and protect those guys too.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That's the voice of Chris Getz.
Yep,
he is the White Sox general manager, the man with the plan.
Man with the plan.
And he's got a plan in place, and they do need to add a couple more veteran guys.
I think they do.
Solidify things.
They still might. It's very early in the offseason, but the trade they made yesterday is one they can feel good about because of the way it replenishes their farm system with four prospects from the Red Sox. Garrett Crochet, high price, I mean, that the Red Sox paid because of his value, because of his status. He's an ace. He's a guy they believe can win them a World Series.
He's an all-star. He's a guy that had a sort of a surprise opening day starter, if you will.
Yes.
But then again, after they trade Dylan Cease, who did you have your heart?
He was the best available arm.
And he was the best arm.
And he backed it up. And I have come around on this. I was really reluctant and resistant to the idea of trading somebody who I felt like could be the centerpiece of your organization. But given their timetable and given baseball economics, you understand why the Sox did what they did yesterday. They had five teams that were interested. And according to Bob Nightingale, it came down to the Red Sox, the Phillies, the Reds, the Yankees, and the Braves. Where are the Cubs? Why weren't the Cubs in the mix?
They were uninterested.
Okay. Anyway.
They're hanging on to those prospects.
They're hanging on to those prospects. Well, I can't wait to talk to Jim Callis at 7:25. But, Mully, what the Sox are doing
the
is they're
– The Cubs have the most top players in the top 100.
Yes. Eight.
So let's just say that the Cubs were involved in this deal. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't they have to give up more based on the fact that you need a certain number of players, based on the fact that it's a crosstown trade? I just don't know.
The Chicago tax?
Everyone said, oh, look at all the Cubs have, and oh, look at the White Sox. That's a perfect trade.
Yeah.
I never felt that way because I always felt that the Sox would want more than they're willing to give up because it's the Cubs.
That's a shrewd way to look at it. I looked at it as it made sense because of the positional need that the White Sox had, and the Cubs had a surplus of players at certain positions that the Sox could use. I think it's going to be fascinating. We can ask Jim Callis at 725, what was the equivalent of the haul they get? Like, what would that be like the Cubs giving up? And maybe we can localize it that way. So I'd be curious to see, like, is this getting like getting Owen Casey? Is Kyle Teal their version of Owen Casey?
Well, both Teal and Montgomery, that's going to be confusing because they already have a Montgomery.
They already got a Montgomery. So excited.
Both those guys are first-round draft picks for 2 years running, and both those guys project to have big league bats. The thing that the Sox are lacking in their minor league system is really the bats. It's really having hitters.
Which is what the Cubs had a surplus of.
I think they're both lefties, right? Or is one guy a switch hitter or something? That's pretty good.
Lefty.
They're both lefty. Teal's lefty.
Teal's lefty.
That's what I was
thinking. Montgomery might be a switch hitter.
Guerrero's a switch hitter.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's why I was thinking of the catchers.
The catchers they're collecting. Yes. They have a variety of catchers now.
They got catchers.
Let's focus on the pitching for a second because I believe Kevin brought it up, and I did allude to the fact that the White Sox – the one thing I think they feel good about as they rebuild this organization is the foundation being based on pitching and young pitching talent.
Yep.
I'm going to name seven names that could be in the mix in 2025 and tell me if this is crazy, why you think that Chris Getz and the White Sox have reason to be optimistic about the future. Kai Bush.
Yeah.
Hagen Smith.
Hagen Smith was a first-round draft pick.
Down the road, perhaps, maybe the end of 2025.
Might be another year.
Jonathan Cannon, he'll start the season in the rotation.
Yes, he will.
Drew Thorpe, coming off of surgery, probably still should be in the rotation.
He will be in the rotation.
Could be your opening day starter.
Centerpiece of the trade of Cease.
Davis Martin.
Davis Martin is a guy I've been around a while. Yeah, he'll be starting.
Nick Nastrini.
Nick Nastrini, we saw some of him last year.
Promising still?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, Noah Schultz.
No, I think it's too early for Noah Schultz. He is the best prospect that they have on their team. He's their top prospect. Left-handed pitcher, tall as a water.
Would you concede that Noah Schultz and Hagen Smith might be a ways away, but they give you reason to feel really good about their future?
Two left-handed pitchers.
Yes.
How old is Noah Schultz?
21, I believe.
Yeah, that's still a little.
Okay.
That's still a little young.
Jake Eater.
Jake Eater came up last year at the end of the year. Jake Eater famously was the reward for the trade of
for Jake Berger, who got the Rangers. Gave up three prospects
they
for.
They gave up three prospects. Yeah. That's so, we got to ask Jim about that one.
Jake Eater is a guy that could be in the mix next year.
Could you argue that Jake Eater got Kenny and Rick fired?
I think that he did.
Or was that more Berger?
I think that was more Berger than Eater.
Or was that more them making a deal without talking to each other?
I think when you have a Berger and an Eater, you've got a real ravenous situation.
It's spelt differently. But
yes,
I like
it is. Okay. Yeah. Last guy. Cairo Iriarte.
Yeah, he came up last year. Another guy they got, Gyro, they got him in the trade for Cease, I believe Venezuelan pitcher. Mm-hmm. I think Ozzie talked about him a little bit.
They're high on
him. And they got another Venezuelan in this deal, right? The fourth pitcher.
The fourth pitcher, yes.
Is he not Venezuelan?
Wickelman Gonzalez.
Yeah.
So he is the fourth guy in the draft, in the trade.
Is he from Venezuela? I believe that's
I'll do
accurate.
A little research there quick on the
yesterday.
Fly.
I did yesterday. It's just, you know, we're talking about 15 guys.
So there are seven names there of White Sox young pitchers, relatively young pitchers, that give you reason to believe when you are rebuilding, you have to base it on something, right? You have to build off a foundation, and that gives them reason to believe it's a sturdy foundation. Maybe it won't pan out. Maybe it will be... there will be prospects that aren't guys who reach their potential. For every guy that reaches a potential, there's another Yoan Moncada or Michael Kopech that you can cynically look at as an example of a trade that didn't turn out well for the White Sox. But I think when you look at right now, you understand what they're doing.
Wickelman Gonzalez from Matey, Venezuela.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I didn't get that yesterday. I didn't get that detail, that nugget.
Yeah, that's.
I was really focused on researching catchers. All these catchers.
It was hard not to.
I want to know if Kyle Teal can play another position because I don't want to.
I think he's more the guy that can catch. I think he's the better catcher. I think that you know, they've got, they obviously have Edgar Cuero. We heard, I believe it was Tuesday, Chris Getz saying that he could make the roster. He's a big bat guy. He's got a real nice stroke for himself.
Okay.
But I don't think he's a great catcher. I think he's improving in that area. Cuban, born player. Not that we're obsessed with what country guys are from, just for your background.
It's an interesting little detail, though.
And he's the ninth rated catching prospect in baseball, whereas I believe the aforementioned newly acquired catcher is from is the fourth is the guy from Boston is fourth rated.
Kyle Teal's number four.
Teal, yeah. And he's a very good. He's a more promising defensive catcher.
I think the prospect term would be he's a stud.
He is. He was a highly drafted
player.
He's
a stud.
They had a bunch of them, though. They had like three guys ahead of him in their organization.
He's a stud.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, let's clarify that. but another guy that can hit, you know, so those are both guys. You need guys that can hit in your system, and the Sox picked up two of those four guys are considered really good hitters.
I want to address some of this Cubs stuff in a moment, but I want to know from a Sox fan perspective, if you're sitting there this morning evaluating how you feel about the job that Chris Getz did in navigating through this, holding on to Crochet at the deadline, waiting for the right moment in the winter meetings, and then pouncing and trading him to the Red Sox for four prospects. How do you feel about Chris Getz today?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't thrilled when they promoted him. I wasn't thrilled at the moves made at the trade deadline. You could use that pitcher, couldn't you? I didn't think they got enough, but what do I know? And he seemed to do okay in that trade. I, as I told you, it is difficult for me to feel a sense of. I mean, I'm kind of like, yeah, they had to make the move. Okay, they lost 121 games with this guy. They're not getting better anytime soon. So they'll improve, but I don't think they're getting much better. And I understand the need to make a trade, but there's another good young pitcher bouncing around Major League Baseball that was once on the White Sox, and there's a lot of those guys.
Yeah, I don't like that idea because I think Garrett Crochet could prosper in Boston in the way that you imagined him doing so in Chicago. And again, if the Red Sox are celebrating a World Series in 2 years the way they did with Chris Sale once they acquired him, they win the trade forever.
Sale won a Cy Young last year.
Oh, my gosh.
Dylan Cease came in fourth, I believe. Ronaldo Lopez got a vote.
Dylan Cease, what in the world is he doing on the trade market?
Yeah, I don't know.
How in the world are the Padres?
I don't understand that. I think the Padres are just wacky.
They're just wacky.
You know, they just,
AJ Preller's a wacky dude.
Yeah, he moves guys. He's trying to get better. I thought they were going to be better than they were in the playoffs last year. They looked like they were peaking at the right time, but they couldn't do anything.
He's willing to take risks.
Yeah.
On the other side of the spectrum, we have a guy like Jed Hoyer, who is maybe risk-averse. I want him to get to the Cubs for a moment. Kyle Tucker is there for the taking. Watch MLB Network. Some guys put it in the context last night that they were the number one team in terms of trade speculation, most likely to make a deal with the Astros. He is something the Cubs don't have, as Kevin Palatine pointed out, a star. Kyle Tucker also doesn't want to avoid, he wants to enter free agency. He's got 1 year left on his deal. In that context, would you be willing to give up if you're Jed Hoyer for Kyle Tucker? You have to get Seiya Suzuki to waive his no trade clause. Not an easy thing to do. You would probably, like Isaac Paredes is the guy you're dangling.
As far as that is concerned, because his agent Wolf came out at the owner's meeting and said that he played ball with them, etc. Depending on what they were talking about, like it seems like he might have a list of teams he would waive the no trade for. It doesn't seem like he wants to go to Houston.
Then you heard Jed Hoyer say that he thinks that Say Suzuki is going to be a Cub. Does he have to say that?
I think he has.
Is he just saying that because the public posture is that you're planning to keep him to make teams more willing to?
Well, what he's saying if he says that is that, you know, Cody Bellinger is not going to be a Cub.
I don't like that.
I know.
I don't like that at all.
I know you don't like that. But
I don't want to be redundant.
I think they're going to trade someone.
And I would prefer to say Seiya to Seiya.
Well, I mean, the problem is, two problems. Who wants him, right? Is he? I mean, it's not that he's not a player. He can play.
He's a good offensive player.
He's a solid baseball player. But you're not going to get a great return for him. And supposedly, one of the things that he's thinking is that if he were to be traded, he'd want like another year added to his contract.
Okay, maybe so. But is that enough to get Kyle Tucker? Seiya waiving his no trade clause, Paredes, who you just got here, he's been here 5 minutes, and a prospect for a guy that could be a rental.
I wouldn't throw in the I don't think they want to give up prospects. Not one of the eight, right? They got eight guys. Listen, some of them are blocked. You got to figure out who you believe is coming up and is going to be a better player than who's there already, how they're going to age in the major leagues. This is all, it's all conjecture and projection. But I think that the feeling was, we're going to tear down this championship team. We're going to get all these pieces, and we're going to be able to get to a point where we bring up one every year, and that's the big impact.
I don't want to
trade close to that.
Cody Bellinger, because you're dying to see what Owen Casey is worth or how good he could be. I don't know that that's a really logical progression for me thought-wise, because Cody Bellinger is a guy that is proven. Owen Casey is a
Cody Bellinger is
a guy with potential.
Cody Bellinger is proven in a couple different ways. He's proven that he can have good years, and he's proven that he can be mediocre in other years. And I don't know that you have the certainty of performance from him that you would require for the amount of money you're paying.
When healthy, I think you have certainty.
Okay.
When healthy, I think as a Cub, you have certainty. He wasn't healthy last year through no fault of his own. I keep saying this. He ran into a wall and got hit by a pitch.
Okay, let me
ask you. That's not injury prone to me.
Let me ask you a question. Let's say he didn't do that. Let's say he didn't get hurt last year.
Mm-hmm.
Would he be with the Cubs this year?
I'm betting that he would have been more productive and probably opted out.
Yes.
Okay.
It's just something.
Okay, you backed me into the corner, counselor. What's your point? That the fact that he is here because he failed?
My point is that they didn't think he'd be here. That when they signed him to the deal, they didn't anticipate.
That's a good point. Because, from a baseball perspective, yes. I think that you might want to keep him. From a cost perspective, you didn't expect it.
That's all.
To be keeping him.
That's
right?
All this is.
All right, so you think this is strictly a salary dump?
No question about it.
That bothers me, though.
David, say a Suzuki would be a salary dump. Because you gave him a no-trade contract.
He's disappointed you on the field in ways that Cody Bellinger hasn't. Cody Bellinger has not been a disappointment the way Seiya Suzuki has to me.
Seiya has a little issue catching the ball.
Yes, I know. In the lights in Milwaukee. I mean, come on.
I know.
Haven't forgotten that one. No. Maybe I need to get past that one. But I think that they're different scenarios. But your points will take them, because that would bother me more if it's just strictly money that's compelling you to trade Cody Bellinger. Because you shouldn't be in that position if you're the Chicago Cubs. I can accept you not chasing Juan Soto. I really can. I understand the 15-year commitment, $750 million. I get it, Jed. I get it. But if you're dumping salary and you're getting rid of Bellinger because of that, no. I'm out.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I think that they had budgetary concerns. They had mapped out this future, and I don't think that they expected him to opt back.
Trade for Kyle Tucker, put Bellinger at first base, keep Michael Busch as your left-handed DH. Whatever you want to do, that's the way you build a championship team. That would be a team that could contend for World Series. Add a pitcher, maybe. You got to back up your bullpen.
If you were to trade Bellinger and maybe somehow got rid of Suzuki as well, couldn't you then go get whatever pitcher your manager has a close relationship with?
Corbin Burns? That scares me, Molly. Let me tell you.
Wouldn't that be possible then?
It's possible, but when I saw 8 years for $218 million for Max Fried, what is the price of Corbin Burns, who's durable? Who's a guy who is durable?
Yeah.
So is he a $200 million pitcher? I don't know if I want to pay that if I'm the Cubs. I really don't. I'm not sure about that.
I think that's going to be what the price is. I think the market is reestablishing itself.
Then why are you dumping Cody Bellinger's salary to chase a $200 million pitcher? I don't know that I understand that necessarily, because I don't know if Corbin Burns is a guy you feel like can deliver you a division title and a pennant. I want to hear that argument, because I just don't know if you're that bereft of pitching where you have to spend that kind of money. I think you need a bopper, you need a back end of the bullpen guy, and your starting pitching has depth.
And there doesn't appear to be too many boppers out there. I mean, would you make a deal with Toronto? Is that your answer?
Yeah.
Because
I want Vlad.
I don't think you're just going to be able to outbid people for Pete Alonso.
I think he's staying in New York. I think Soto going to the Mets probably guarantees they have to keep him now.
Yeah, you would think.
They have to keep him.
Well, they've proven that money is not an issue
in
any way.
That guy.
Yeah. I wish the guy owned the Sox.
I know.
That's not a shot at Jerry, but I mean, wouldn't you love to have an owner for the Cubs that said, you know, I'm a fan. Money be damned.
Money be damned. That's the New York way.
Wouldn't that be one heck of a thing to have in your corner?
I'm excited to talk to Jim Callis.
All right. I am too. We got so many questions for him. We're going to talk about this trade, what they're getting, how quickly they get it. And we got a lot of things to talk to Jim about. We'll bring him in next, Mr. MLB himself. It's Mully and Haw. It's Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Ay, ay, ay.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Is it just me, or has TV gotten really complicated? I'm either endlessly searching for my favorite shows or subscribing to a dozen different streaming services to make sure I can watch everything I love. And I'm not even saving that much money compared to my old cable bill. Thankfully, Philo has changed all that for me. One service, all the stuff I need. Philo's got current seasons of the shows I can't miss live on networks like Paramount, A&E, MTV, Discovery, and TLC. Classics like The Office, Martin, and Friends that I never get sick of, and all of the incredible originals on AMC Plus, from Mad Men to Orphan Black. Don't forget their library of more than 75,000 movies and shows, all of which I can save and re-watch anytime for a whole year. Never miss a minute of shows like Gypsy Rose, Life After Lockup on Lifetime, Yellowstone, or Fatal Attraction. Best of all, with Philo, you get all this for just $28 a month. No contracts, no hassles. Just one subscription and a world of entertainment. So go to philo.tv and check it out for a free 7-day trial. That's philo.tv to start watching.
It's better over here. AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
It's James Kell from the Sleeper King Football Podcast. In fantasy football, sleepers can win you championships, and that's why I am here. Every episode is just 15 to 20 minutes long, every Tuesday through Friday. Subscribe to the Sleeper King Podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your pods.
I feel a lot better. I do. And we were focused on bringing in as much high-end talent that we could, and we were able to accomplish that. You know, you're not necessarily focused too much on proximity, but in this case, they happen to be upper-level players, and Braden just getting started, but just coming out of college. And, we want to do what's right for each player in regards to their development journey. But we feel like, you know, it's just a diversified group that's really going to help our improve our roster.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That's Chris Getz talking about the White Sox. And we are delighted to welcome in friend of the program, Jim Callis from MLB Pipeline, MLB Network. You see him on the Marquee Network. Jim, how are you, buddy? Great to talk to you. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, happy holidays, guys. Good to talk to you as always.
Very curious about your take of this trade. What was your first thought when you heard that the White Sox had indeed finally traded Garrett Crochet? They'd done so with the Red Sox. We'd heard a lot of names coming out there, but They got four of their top 15 players. How did you evaluate that when you, knowing the players much better than we do, what did you think?
Yeah. My first thought, honestly, was it made me think about the Chris Sale trade, because the Chris Sale trade, when they made it at the time, it was two top 100 prospects. And I don't remember the exact rankings, but I think at the time, Yoan Moncada might have been number one on our prospect list. And Michael Kopech was one of the best pitching prospects in baseball. Mm. And this year they got two of the top 100 prospects in Kyle Teal and Brayden Montgomery. And then with the Sale trade, they got two additional players, Luis Alexander Basabe, and I think it was Victor Diaz was a reliever. And, you know, this year they got two additional players in Chase Mydroth and then Wickelman Gonzalez. And, you know, I think this is a good package. White Sox fans listening to the names I just rattled off the Chris Sale trade are probably thinking, oh man, like, and what are we talking about here? But, you know, prospects are, you know, there is prospect risk. You know, I don't think Moncada and Kopech, you know, became fully what the White Sox hoped, but, you know, they got talented prospects then. They got talented prospects now. Kyle Keel's one of the best catching prospects in the game. You know, you could, I don't even think it's an argument now between Kyle Teal and Edgar Cuero. I think the White Sox have the best catching prospects in baseball right now.
Wow.
And they should be set behind the plate for a while. Teal's kind of a complete package. I mean, he's an advanced hitter. I think it's 20 homer power. And I think he's a little underrated defensively. I think he's a solid receiver with plus arm. So he's exciting. You know, Brayden Montgomery's kind of your classic right fielder, good athlete, well above average raw power, plus arm. He's up to 96. I'm not sure when he'll make his pro debut, if he'll be ready to go by opening day. He broke his ankle sliding in the Super Regionals at Texas A&M last year, which is one of the reasons he dropped to number 12. Both Teal, who went 14th, and Montgomery, who went 12th, were the last two first-round picks by the Red Sox. And honestly, if the draft was done again today, the 2023 draft, Teal would not last 14 picks, and Matt Shaw wouldn't last 13 picks either to the Cubs. And then, you know, the other two of the guys that got in the trade, one I kind of look at it high floor, high ceiling. You know, Mydroth is – he does one thing really, really well. He gets on base. He led the International League AAA with a .437 on-base percentage this year. There's not a lot of power there. It's probably, you know, fringy speed, arm, athleticism. He's a second baseman, but, like, second baseman with on-base skills. I don't think he's going to be a star, but I bet you he's the second baseman on the White Sox next year. Hmm. And like I said, he's a high-floor guy. And then Gonzalez is kind of your high-ceiling guy. Like, when he's on, it's a mid-90s fastball. It's a hammer curveball. In 2023, he led the entire minor leagues in strikeout rate per nine innings, strikeout percentage. And then 2024, he frankly wasn't very good. So, I mean, he's a little bit more of a lottery ticket with some upside. But, you know, as the fourth player in the deal, worth taking a chance on. So, you know, again, you know, prospects aren't sure things. But this is a pretty good haul. I mean, it's a better haul than they got for Dylan Cease. You know, I think Crochet had more value. But I think this was kind of the type of package you were going to get. You know, like you were hoping for if you're trading Garrett Crochet with the amount of control that remains with him. But also, not a lot of track record as a starter either, that you'd get, you know, potentially two top 100 prospects. And they got two guys, you know, pretty much from the upper half of the list. And then a couple other interesting guys as well. So I think they did pretty well in this trade, you know, with the caveat that I like prospects as much as anybody, and prospects aren't sure things.
So, Jim, we know so much about the Cubs system because we talk about it a lot, and we know they have eight of the top 100 prospects in baseball, and our audience is more familiar with some of those names. So if we were going to have the equivalent of what the Cubs might have given up, who are these prospects like in that regard? Who is it the equivalent that the White Sox are getting? Because you described them well, and I think a lot of people now know a little bit more about those guys. But how, you know, what's the exchange rate, and how would you describe who these guys might be in terms of those terms?
Yeah, when you texted me this question before I came on, I was like, oh, this is kind of a cool question. Nobody ever asked me anything like this. So, if you're breaking it down and you're looking to where guys are ranked on the two lists and on our top 100 list, Kyle Teal would fall like right in between Matt Shaw and Owen Casey. Like, he'd be that caliber of prospect. Like, we have Shaw a little bit ahead of him, Casey a little bit behind him, and I'm a big Owen Casey fan. So that would be your headliner. You know, Braden Montgomery would kind of be in that James Triantos, Kevin Alcantara territory. I like him, assuming he comes back from ankle 100%, which he should. I like him a little bit better than those guys. I think Triantos winds up in the outfield, so I think it's an apt comparison. I just think he's got more power, more arm strength than those guys, comparable athletically to Alcantara. Chase Meidroth is kind of similar to a kid who's in the lower levels of the Cubs system named Pedro Ramirez, who's a hit-over-power guy who probably fits best at second base. And then for Wickelman Gonzalez, he kind of reminds me of Jackson Wiggins. But, you know, the Cubs don't have – their pitching prospect depth is thin right now because they've promoted so many guys to the big leagues. But Wiggins is another guy with a big arm who needs to throw more strikes and is kind of a – you know, you have a starter. You know, if you dream and he hits the ceiling, you know, he pitches in the front half of your rotation. If he doesn't throw more strikes, you're probably looking at a reliever. So it would be a package comparable to – you know, if I like Montgomery a little bit more than Triantos and Alcantara, I'd say maybe it's like a Shaw, Triantos, Ramirez, Wiggins package would be something comparable for the Cubs. And you know, we don't know, you know, how seriously the Cubs pursued a Crochet or what they did. But if I were the Cubs and I had that opportunity, I probably would make that trade. Like, as much as I love Sean Casey, I probably would have made that trade. And again, I'm not saying it was offered. Maybe the White Sox preferred this Red Sox package. But if I were the Cubs and I could have pulled that off, I would have pulled the trigger on that. Although I think the Cubs would prefer to trade some big leaguers to clear room for some of the younger guys and give them more payroll flexibility. But they're kind of the Cubs are kind of running into a weird situation where virtually their entire position player starting lineup is back. And they have five guys in AAA who are top 100 prospects on the verge of being ready for the big leagues, and some of them are, and they just don't have room to play everybody.
Jim, we got a texter checking in. I find this very amusing. Says he can't wait to see what the Sox get from the Red Sox for Noah Schultz when that time comes.
And I can't. Go on Hagen Smith, too. Hagen Smith, a couple years after.
Oh, boy.
So I guess the what I wanted to ask you before that joke was about Noah Schultz and about Hagen Smith. What does the timetable change on some of these prospects because of the situation this team is in? In other words, you know, it would not be a positive thing to change the timetable, but do you look at guys differently when you move out your power left-hander and you say, well, we know we got one coming in a year or two. We got two coming. We just don't know when. Is that a danger that they have to avoid, or is that something that might well happen?
No, I think they'll avoid it, especially considering Chris Getz's background is in player development. And, you know, I mean, here's the thing. The White Sox aren't going to win for at least a couple of years, so there's no incentive to rush guys. I do think when you're talking about your you know, super talented guys, you know, I mean, to me, Noah Schultz is the best left-handed pitching prospect in baseball. And you could argue he's the best pitching prospect in baseball. We'd like to see more innings out of him, but he's been untouchable. But and Hagen Smith, you know, had set the all-time strikeout rate record in NCAA Division I last year and has amazing stuff too. And I think with guys like that, they dictate their own timetable. Even if you had a plan, even if you were going to rush him or you're saying, okay, we want Noah Schultz to spend a full year in the minors. If Noah Schultz comes out and dominates guys in AAA like he has everywhere else in the minors, at some point you're just going to have to call him up. Like, you know, he's going to run out of challenges. But no, I don't think they're going to rush those guys. I do think that's one of the – I guess we want to look for a bright spot for being as bad as the White Sox were last year. There's no incentive. I mean, if you rush Noah Schultz to the big leagues this year, what, you're going to win 62 games instead of 58 or something? I mean, I don't think they're going to fall in that trap. I think they'll let these guys kind of develop naturally. I mean, the one I'm curious about is Colson Montgomery.
Yeah.
Who did not have a good year in AAA last year and frankly didn't ever really hit in his various stints in AA. And, you know, I think there was some thought he might have been the opening day shortstop last year, and he'd definitely be up during the season. I would kind of let that one kind of you know, develop organically too. I wouldn't go into the spring saying, oh, we want him to be the opening day shortstop or this or that. I would let his play dictate it, and I think they're going to do that with a lot of the guys.
When you talk about, excuse me, Kyle Teal, we heard Chris Guest describe him as a good athlete, which suggests maybe, does he have other positions? Like, you know, you look at catchers who were drafted, and I know Kyle Schwarber is an extreme example, but you wonder about, with the White Sox having so many quality catchers, as you point out, the depth at the position, if they want to get both guys on the field, is Kyle Teal somebody who could play another spot?
He could. I mean, you have the DH spot, too. I mean, he's athletic enough to play, you know, left field. You know, the thing is, it's different than a Schwarber thing. Like, Schwarber, to give him credit, I think Schwarber had a chip on his shoulder and people were telling him he couldn't catch. And he wanted to catch. And he was willing to put in the time and work hard at it. But the reality of it was, at best, Kyle Schwarber was going to be a below-average to fringy catcher who was not good behind the plate. I'm not saying he would have been terrible, but he wasn't going to be good. And you were better off, like it's weird, but in a weird sort of way, him blowing out his knee in the outfield was the best thing that ever could have happened to him, because it took the catching away. So it maximized the value of his bat. And for the Cubs, it also, like, looking back, got Javi Baez at bats. He probably wouldn't have gotten on that team if that spot hadn't opened up when Schwarber missed most of 2016. With Teal, I think a big part of his value is that he's a good catcher. So you don't want to, like for Schwarber, from day one, my point was, you want to maximize his bat. I wouldn't mess around with the catching. I want him to hit 40 home runs a year. With Teal, a big part of his value is the catch. Now, that said, this is it's different the way the position's evolved. You just don't see too many teams have a guy catch 130 games. And I think you could see a situation where Edgar Caro, who I also mentioned as the other, you know, top 100 catcher in the White Sox system, he's okay defensively. I mean, I don't think he's ever going to be better than okay, where I think Teal is pretty solid behind the plate. So you might have a situation where, you know, the Teal catches 90 to 100 games and Caro catches 60 to 70 games. And Caro can hit too. So then Caro, you know, plays some DH and maybe, you know, Teal plays some DH. But I see it as more of a timeshare of catching, so you don't wear the guy out at catching. But maybe you put him in the lineup at DH. I don't think they're going to run him around left field too much. I don't think they would make it a full-time position. I think his defense is underrated. I like his bat, but I think he's a good catcher. So I think his value comes from contributing on both sides of the ball.
Obviously the White Sox traded Jake Berger, and they traded him for Jake Eater, basically. And Eater is 26, left-handed, came up a little bit at the end of the year. I don't know what his future looks like. What did they get? What did Berger receive in compensation? Or not him, but Florida. I'm just curious what you think. Did they do better than the Sox did a year earlier? Let me put it that way.
I guess at the time of the trade, I liked the Jake Berger trade for the White Sox. Like what happened with Eater? Eater came out of Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
And his first year in pro ball, he dominated. They sent him straight to Double A, which is kind of a curious move because he'd been kind of in and out of the rotation at Vanderbilt, which had a bunch of pitchers. And Eater dominated. And I mean, I had one scout who's told me he thought Eater, he hadn't seen every pitcher in the minor leagues, but the Eater was the best pitcher he saw anywhere in the minors in, I guess that was 21. I think it was 21. And then he blew out his elbow that August. And the problem is he just hasn't been the same since. You know, when the White Sox got him, I think literally he had had his best start. He'd just come back from the Tommy John. He'd also had like a foot injury, so delayed his comeback. And he looked really good in Double A. And I thought when they made the trade, like, hey, they had a chance to maybe get a guy who's one of the best left-handed pitching prospects in baseball. And you could still see the stuff at times, but he just has been hit. So, like, that one doesn't look like it's going to work out. But at the time, I liked it. You know, what the Marlins got for him, they got kind of three, like none of the prospects they got, I wouldn't rank any of them ahead of any of the, I mean, different type of trade, but I wouldn't rank any of the three guys the Marlins just got ahead of any of the four guys the White Sox just got for Crochet. I'd take Wickelman Gonzalez over all of them. Eshedri Vargas and Max Acosta, they're two middle infielders who probably are more second base than the shortstop. And they're okay, but like realistically, they're probably utility men. And then they got a lefty named Brian Mendoza, who is a classic pitchability lefty. He throws in the low 90s. but he's got a really effective slider and a plus changeup. So they took more kind of, I think, complementary pieces in that trade. So, like, we may look back and that may work out better than what the White Sox got for Jake Berger. But at the time, you know, Jake Eater, you were hoping was maybe a number three starter. It seemed like he was on that road, and it just didn't happen. I mean, he mystifies me. You could still look on the right day and you see pretty good stuff, but he's just been, you know, torched ever since the White Sox got.
Yeah, that's the only problem with the White Sox.
Great stuff, Jim.
Great, Jim. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, good talking to you guys. Happy holidays.
You too.
You too, buddy. That is Jim Callis.
It's a great summary of all the prospects.
Yeah, I feel like I've learned a lot.
Yeah.
And I had done my own little summary, and I felt like I was on.
You did. Okay. You were ready today. Right.
Yeah.
Did your homework.
Today. Thank you for clarifying. It's Mully and Haw at Chicago Sports Radio 670 Score.
Why pay more for prescriptions? Stop overpaying and start saving with SingleCare. It's easy. Find your prescription on singlecare.com, show the coupon at the pharmacy, and start saving. SingleCare works at pharmacies nationwide and is completely free to use, whether you have insurance or not. So the next time you fill a prescription, check SingleCare to make sure you're getting the best price. Take control of your prescription costs. Go to singlecare.com or download the free app today.
You know, there's different ways to shape a deal, and you know, you don't want to just focus on volume, but we're fortunate in this deal to get high-end talent, and four of them. So we feel like we've got value and volume in this deal, and that's why it became very obvious that we need to make a move on this.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 of the Score. That's Chris Getz again.
You know what you get after value and volume on a trade? Validation.
Oh, boy. You with all the Vs, huh?
I'm just following his lead.
Yeah. Venomous reaction from the fan base?
Not today.
All right.
Not a lot of venom out there.
Let me read this to you, because I think this is an important thing to consider.
Okay.
This is MLB.com, all their prospect rankings, and these are the Chicago White Sox updated prospect rankings after the trade. So we know Noah Schultz is their number one top overall prospect. Number two now is Kyle Teal. He moves in, the fourth prospect for Boston moves in at number two for the White Sox. Braden Montgomery moves into the fifth spot with Colson Montgomery fourth. That's going to be confusing.
That's a Montgomery ward of prospects.
Yeah, there is a whole ward of, oh boy. And then you have to go down to 13, not necessarily lucky, but that's Chase Meadroth, who Jim told us could compete. And I
he said he's going to play second base for him
this year. He could be their second baseman. He's 13, and Wickelman Gonzalez moves in at 14. So they got. They got four of the top 14 prospects in their system in that trade.
That's a good deal based on those numbers.
Yeah.
And I'm curious now, when we see the next ranking of farm systems in baseball, what this trade does.
Six of the top 60 overall in baseball.
Where does that put the Sox?
Yeah.
Overall, in terms of the farm systems, this is a minor league system that's being rebuilt by Chris Getz. This is the way you rebuild an organization from the ground floor on up. And it was in shambles, let's face it, when he took over. So let's find out if he can continue this. Does this give you more or less confidence or no effect at all on their ability or your interest level in them trading Luis Robert Jr.? Because if they continue to this, boy, they're going to have even more prospects to that mix.
Well, I hear what you're saying. And if that were the case, if I felt like they were going to get a proper return for him, I don't think I would be too upset about it, but I worry about trading a guy when his value is at the lowest.
Selling low is not a good idea.
Never a good idea. They don't have many legitimate Major League Baseball players. He's a former All-Star. He's one of the few guys that could step into any team and help any team, in my opinion. And it's hard for me to say, Well, if you have a bag of shells, why don't I? Like, I'll give you Manhattan for your bead, sir. I don't think they need to do that. So I hope they hold off on that one for a little while.
Quick note on Cody Bellinger. According to John Heyman, our guy at the New York Post and MLB Network, Cubs and Yankees are talking, and the Cubs are asking the Yankees to take on nearly the $52.5 million that Bellinger is due over the next couple years, and the Yankees expecting more cash coming back. They're looking at Bellinger as a fit at first base and center field. So Cubs and Yankees in talks about Cody Bellinger.
You must be delighted, Mr.
I'm not,
David.
I'm not. I'm disappointed, actually. I will be despondent if they trade Cody Bellinger to the Yankees.
That's the wrong word. Let's don't forget, we've got Billy Donovan coming up.
Yes, 8:25.
We're going to talk to Billy at 8:25. And we got to get to, there's a new sheriff in college football. There's a new
We're
going to
talk about Bill Belichick.
Who's the greatest ever.
In light of the Billy Donovan interview coming up at 8:25, remember the Bulls and the Hornets tomorrow at the United Center.
Yep.
Newly scheduled game for the Bulls in the Emirates NBA Cup group play. Good news, tickets available. Bulls.com/tickets. Catch the Bulls in action Friday night at 7.
All right. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670. The Score.
Aye, aye, aye.